From listener supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Tuesday, December 5th, 2023. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, Gunathchish, Hawa, Salamat, for joining the conversation. On today's show, tonight at the Goldtown Nickelodeon, the Juno World Affairs Council presents its Tuesday travelogue with Kira Alkema, 4 weeks in Lebanon. We'll chat with Kira. The Grateful Dogs of Juno's 14th annual pet food drive is happening this week. We'll chat with the group to find out more and how you can participate. And we'll have all the December event goodness from the Juno Public Libraries. Those conversations, music, and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. In just a couple hours, the Tuesday travelogue from the Juno World Affairs Council will take place. It starts at 5:15 at the Gold Town, and the subject is 4 weeks in Lebanon. It will be led by Kira Alkema, who recently returned from her fourth visit to Lebanon. She went to visit friends, attend weddings, eat some yummy food, and do some hiking. But the world shifted while she was there, and her plans had to change. Here to give a preview of her travelogue tonight is Kira Alkema, and also joining us is Linda Kruger from the Juno World Affairs Council. Gunathchish, Hagye Adi to you both. Hi.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. It's so great to have you here. Kira, will you tell us the song that we were listening to?
Of course. That was from Fairouz, Lebanese diva number one. The song is El Bint Shalabiya, and it means the girl at the well.
Oh, nice. It was such a great song. We were like dancing in here a little bit. We were getting in the mood for it, so it was really nice. So it's really a pleasure to have you both here. But first, let's talk about the travel logs themselves, and then we can go chat about the event happening in just a couple hours. So, Linda, what are the travel logs?
Okay, well, the Juno World Affairs Council is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that's been around in Juno for forever, it seems like. I know I joined it back in the 80s or 90s. And around 20 years ago, I worked for the Forest Service, and people came up to me and said, oh, I just traveled to such and such a place. Do you think I could give a talk out at the visitor center, at the Glacier Visitor Center? And I said, well, you know, we really don't do that. And I thought, well, we need a place in Juno to do that, to give people an opportunity to share their adventures and their travels around the world. And wouldn't that be cool? And so I talked to the folks down at the Nickelodeon and said, what do you think? Do you think we could do this? And so we did. And so we've been doing this for probably close to 20 years now. It's been a long time. Of course, not during COVID, but pre-COVID, you know, we've done a lot of these over the years. And just contacting people, I was telling Kira, I have a lot of friends on Facebook, and they post their pictures from their international travels, and I contact them and I say, hey, how would you like to do a travelogue? And just people that I know are traveling, and then other people contact us and say, hey, I'd be really interested in doing a travelogue. That would be great. So we have this one, and we have another one arranged for January 23rd and one in February, and we'll be going all the way through May. And then we take a time out for the summer because it's hard to get people to come inside.
Well, people have to go travel internationally.
People have to travel. That's right. And so we take time off during the summer, but then we'll be back up and running probably in September. September again.
Gotcha. Okay. That sounds great. And, you know, it is really important because, I mean, part of living in Juneau, we love our community here. We love how close-knit we are, but it's also isolated and we need to get out and Absolutely. We need to go have adventures elsewhere. And then to bring that knowledge back and share that in pictures and story is really valuable. So that's kind of great. And give us the website just so people know where to go see the schedule.
Okay. It's jwac.org. And yeah. You can go there. You can find out the schedule for the travelogues, the other events. We have World Quest is coming up on February 2nd. So that's another one that's coming up, too. So you can get all the information about JWAC events at jwac.org. You can also join most of our events, except for World Quest. All of our events are free and open to everybody, and we encourage everyone to come. But you can also join for $50 or make donations, and that helps support bringing ambassadors and other speakers to Juneau so that we can learn about world events and what's happening around the world. So we host ambassadors and professors and business leaders and activists and all kinds of people. And we're able to bring those people in because of donations and memberships.
Yeah, so, I know that the World Quest, that's like a big fundraiser
exactly.
to do all of these things. Yep. I think we had Ambassador Dan Smith on a few weeks ago.
That's correct. Yep.
That was really lovely. And so, and these topics, these travel logs, they cover a wide variety of topics, right? It's really whatever the person has experienced that they're sharing back here with the community of Juneau.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. It's just what's going on around the world, whether it's economics or education or politics or culture, you know, yeah, all kinds of things.
That's great. And if people have potential plans or they have had experiences, if they were interested in doing a travelogue, how do they get in touch?
They can contact either one of us. I mean, my email address is Linda, L-I-N-D-A, Laska, L-A-S-K-A. So just one A in the middle, L-I-N-D-A, L-A-S-K-A, 2003@gmail.com.
Okay, great.
And so if you want to email me and say, hey, I heard you on the radio and I'd love to do a travelogue, and we can talk about it and try to find to get you in the schedule.
That's great, because I know they do them. You do them all winter long, which
yep.
is really great.
That's right.
Yeah.
We will also have a sign-up sheet tonight at the Gold Town.
Oh,
and
excellent.
There you go.
Yes. And you can also just email the Juneau World Affairs JWAC. Council email address, which is on the website.
Yeah, great. Okay.
So several ways to contact us. If you see us at Fred Meyer, you can also approach us there.
Just reach out. Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, by going to the events and chatting with people afterward, that's another way to just sort of figure it out and say, hey, mm-hmm. I actually had a great experience, or this reminded me of something that I did, which is kind of cool.
Yep.
Okay, so Kira, let's talk about this travelogue that's going to be happening in just about 2 hours. It's so great. And this is the fourth time that you've been to Lebanon. But I want to go back to the beginning, right? So I'm curious about, when was the first time you thought about going to Lebanon?
The first time I thought about going to Lebanon was back in probably December 2019. I have a friend who was living there at the time, and she was working at an NGO. And she decided that she wanted to start her own NGO in Lebanon with kind of a different perspective than NGOs that were operating in the area at the time. She wanted to start a free shop full of clothing and other items for Syrian, Palestinian, and Lebanese people in the area, where they could choose anything they wanted without paying anything. So she had this idea. She also wanted to make sure that this organization was staffed by local people. But to get it off the ground, she asked foreigners like me to come over and help. So remember, this was back in 2019. And then a lot of things happened, like a pandemic. There was a massive explosion at the port of Beirut on August 4, 2020. There was a lot of upheaval. And in spite of everything, I still decided to go. But because of the constraints of the pandemic, we really spent most of our time at the NGO. I didn't really get to see a lot of Lebanon. And I was around all of these people who had been living there and talking about these amazing experiences. And honestly, I got jealous. And I wanted to go back and I wanted to see more, but I continued to volunteer. And, you know, when you're in Lebanon, you're always getting invited to lunches to spend time with people. So seeing tourist attractions really falls by the wayside, because you're having these really special experiences. You're in people's homes. And this year, after three visits, I decided my fourth visit, it's going to be mostly for tourism purposes.
Right. Because your friend is the one who initially got you interested in going over.
Yes.
And then sort of you get there, you meet wonderful people, you sort of fall in love with the area. But you realize maybe I haven't seen enough of the area because I've been helping my friend. What is an NGO?
NGO stands for non-governmental organization. So that means like a charity, anything that operates outside of an official government capacity. And so in Lebanon, there's lots of non-governmental organizations. And I'd like to talk about that a little bit more at the travelogue.
Yeah, sure. So, and your friend was setting one up because they wanted to provide a service or materials, or what was it that they were wanting to do?
She wanted to provide a specific service for people. So that was providing clothing, household items, kitchen items, sanitary products for people who were living in Lebanon. So that's Syrian, Lebanese, Palestinian people. A lot of times in aid distribution, people don't really have a lot of agency in what they get. Sometimes people just get a box of stuff and that's it. So this idea of the free shop was a chance to give people more dignity in their choices and in their everyday life to actually choose items that they wanted and needed without being told what to do. So this was pretty atypical for NGOs in Lebanon at the time. So that's why it was pretty unique and an exciting opportunity to watch really grow from the ground up.
Oh, wow. So she was offering these items for free. Is that what you said?
Yes. No cost to beneficiaries.
Wow. Did they have to have specific, is it something that they have to qualify for, or is it anybody could walk in? You know, because we have so many programs here in the States where it's like, oh, you got to apply and you got to be approved and you have to do a certain thing. But was anybody in need?
There are so many people in need in Lebanon. Yeah. Most of the country lives beneath the poverty line, particularly Syrian and Palestinian people who will never be able to have Lebanese citizenship. That also means that they are barred from educational opportunities, healthcare opportunities that Lebanese people have. And that also means they don't have access to the same kind of jobs. So these folks are stuck beneath the poverty line, and they get a lot of benefit and help from the United Nations that is operating in the area and other NGOs. But a lot of people really need help. So yeah. Everywhere in Lebanon, there is a place for it. And initially, we had folks come to our location and register to make an appointment so they could have their specific time in the shop. They could be with their family. They could try stuff on. And then we started going to what is called the informal tented settlements in Lebanon. So when you're thinking of a refugee camp, you're probably thinking of an informal tented settlement. It's like a refugee camp, but it lacks a lot of the same kind of structure and funding that you would see in other places. So yes, the need is enormous in Lebanon. And I want to say initially at first, a lot of the items that were in the free shop back in 2020 and for following years actually came from people in this community. People would send me with jackets and money and other items to bring to Lebanon to people who really need them.
Wow. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. We're talking with Kira Alkema. She's presenting tonight at the Gold Town at 5:15. It's part of the Juno World Affairs Council Tuesday travelogues, and the topic is 4 weeks in Lebanon. And serendipitously, she's been there four times. So four times, 4 weeks. Is that 4 weeks each time you've gone for a week, or was it this time you went for 4 weeks?
It was planned for more.
Yeah.
Things changed. I will talk about that.
Yeah, we'll get into
tonight.
That. Yeah, tonight, yes. And in just a little bit, yeah. Too. We'll talk about that. So now it's interesting because you said you started going in 2019. And of course, we know what happened 2020. Oh, in 2019, you had the idea to go. Okay. And then in 2020, so you went actually during the pandemic. You traveled overseas during that time. And then you did that two more times. Was that in 2020 or did you go in 2021 and 22? When did the other trips happen?
2021 and 2022. And okay. Then the most recent trip was this
okay.
year.
Okay. So each year, basically, yes. You've been going back and each time has been a different experience, I'm sure.
Yes.
And that's amazing because, you know, I mean, it sounds like you've met a ton of people and you've probably expanded the people that you are, staying with or hanging out with or having lunch with. You said it's very, very nice to have lunch with folks, right?
Yeah.
And then, but so then this idea crept up that, wait a minute, I haven't seen enough. And so you decided to like go backpacking and like take a hike. Is that what you decided to do?
Correct. I had a lot of things going on this trip. And kind of the crown jewel of my plans was doing something called the Lebanon Mountain Trail. It's Lebanon's version of the Pacific Crest Trail or the Appalachian Trail. Okay. But Lebanon is like two thirds the size of Connecticut. So it's just under 300 miles instead of these super long trails we have in the US. And so the idea was we would be able to be in nature. We'd be able to see a lot. We'd be able to really get to see a different side of Lebanon than the one I was used to. Mm. So we were able to do a lot of that. And I gotta say, gosh, I can't wait to show people the pictures and to tell people about all of the misadventures and adventures.
Yeah, you said something in your note to me for coming on the show. You said something about the ups and downs of the trail. And I was like, I'm assuming that, did you fall? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, of course, Boston. Yes, there was a lot of elevation gain and decline on this trail. My friend and I, yeah, maybe we fell a little bit. Maybe there were also some figurative ups and downs. Plans, best laid plans are going to waste. I don't want to reveal too much, but sometimes we had to eat condiments for dinner. I won't reveal which one until the travelogue tonight. So there was
a little teasing for the travelogue.
What condiments was it? Ketchup? Was it mayonnaise? Yeah. I'll never say goodness. Until tonight.
Right. That's so amazing. And you have some wonderful pictures, obviously. You must have taken, the mountains must be beautiful. The trails and just the whole place must be gorgeous in terms of everything that you've experienced. Did you take pictures of people as well?
Yeah, I did. And something I really want to be mindful of when I'm traveling is making sure that I have consent from people if I'm taking their picture. So if you see a picture of somebody's face in the presentation, it means I have their express permission to show their image. Sometimes there's maybe an action shot. I wasn't able to get permission, or I don't know the person. I don't have their number. I could not ask, hey, can I use the side of your face or, right. you know, like your foot in this presentation? So there are pictures of people. There's a lot going on. So there's kind of a mix of everything.
That's cool. So I'm curious, how much experience have you had presenting? Is this a fun adventure for you tonight? Is this something that you're really, it seems like you're really excited to do this.
I am excited to share this part of the world because it really means a lot to me. There's a reason I keep going back and I'm very passionate to share my experience with people. So many people have come up to me to say, I don't really know much about this place. What is going on? And I'm really excited to share with people, what I saw. And I have to say, there's a lot of ideas in the media about people in different parts of the world. And there's nothing like hearing from somebody who was actually there and experiencing things and learning from people there. And I'm excited to bring that home.
Yeah, you know, I think it, when you get right down to it, no matter what you believe or where you are at in terms, but knowing that in a sense, we're all human, right? We're all human beings and everybody has trials and tribulations and everybody has struggles and there's, you know, everybody's going through things. There's relationships that are happening. There's children that are, you know, involved. There's, you know, different things that people are doing. People want to have careers. They want to better their lives and their families. And sometimes we don't see that because we get certain impressions from movies or televisions or just the media, right? In terms of what that is. So it sounds like tonight you'll be putting not only a sort of a face on the mountains, but on the people as well, right? Like in terms of that. And so that's kind of cool. So let's talk a little bit about this trip. When did you go? When did you start out your adventure?
I left Juneau on September 16, and then I arrived in Beirut on September 18.
Okay. And how long were you planning to be there?
Gosh, I think... Okay, details are hazy because plans had to change. I believe I was meant to leave Lebanon on October 26th.
Okay, so you were going to be there for a little bit.
Yeah,
you were planning to be there. And then, of course, something happened, and we know what that is. October 7th happened, and you've been alluding to it a little bit in terms of plans changed. So tell us a little bit about what happened. And I know you're going to cover a lot of this tonight in the travelogue, but I'm curious for the listeners to understand that in terms of you were there in Lebanon and what happened in terms of your trip, and how did you experience it, and where were you? And just a little bit of that stuff would be great.
I was in a mountain village called Aden in the north of Lebanon on October 7. And that was when I saw a notification on my phone about the Hamas attack in southern Israel. And I remember at the time I read the article, but it was one of those, this story will be updated. So I didn't really read many details because we also had to hike like 15 miles that day and we had to get going. And initially I felt that, you know, this was not an immediate threat to us. We're in this remote area of Lebanon. Nothing will happen. And then as time went on, that definitely changed, mostly from pressure from outside. My parents were constantly messaging me, you know, what will it take you to leave? I'm reading this thing. I'm reading that thing. Mm. And friends, my boss, people are concerned and rightfully so. But at the same time, I was in Lebanon. I was feeling safe the entire time. Everybody in Lebanon who I spoke to reiterated to me, you should feel safe here. And that's something I have always heard in Lebanon. Every time I've gone, that's not like a unique thing, because Lebanese people know the reputation of their country. They know about the instability and they know about this stuff. So I've heard this before. And it came to a point, which I will mention in the travelogue, that it was time to leave. And I never felt unsafe at any point when I was in Lebanon. And I credit that to the Lebanese people for their strength and hospitality, and knowing that a lot of people in Lebanon are actually unable to leave the country, whether they are Palestinian, Syrian, or Lebanese. None of those are super strong passports, and a lot of people really lack the funds to travel. So there was this interest in maintaining as much normalcy as possible, even though the situation is really out of their control.
Mm. Now, it sounds like you obviously had your parents and, like you said, your boss, and everybody was concerned. Did you have to, I'm just curious about this because I don't know how it works, but did you have to like register with like the embassy over there or anything? Or did they reach out to you knowing that there were U.S. citizens in this country at this time? And were they trying to get in touch with you as well?
Yes. So every time I go on a trip, I always enroll in the State Department Smart Traveler Enrollment Program. And that's just the way you tell the U.S. government, I am going to be in this country from this time to this time. I always do this. And so after October 7, we started receiving some emails from the embassy saying, make sure you enroll in STEP, make sure you exercise caution and this kind of thing. And then eventually they sent us an email saying, if you are in Lebanon, you should consider leaving while commercial flights are still available. And spoiler alert, that is what prompted me to leave, because I knew that options could be limited. There's really only one way in and out of Lebanon, and that's the airport. So if the airport shut down, then I would be stuck. And my biggest concern was not being stuck in a place I hated, because I obviously love this place, but I didn't want to be a drain on the resources for the people who had to stay.
Yeah. And you mentioned to me as well that you are looking really forward to going back. Do you have plans to go back in the coming, in the future, in 2024? You've done it every year. It seems like that would be the thing.
Yeah, I got to keep up this reputation yeah. I have. And I mean, every time I leave Lebanon, it's really hard because I feel like I haven't seen everything. I haven't done everything. I haven't met all these people I want to meet. And so every time there's, you know, something that crops up, we didn't finish the trail. So got to finish the trail.
Haven't checked that box yet.
Yeah, got to go back. Got to fall down some more hills a little bit farther south in Lebanon. Maybe help my friends harvest some olives. I don't know what's going to happen, but I mean, I think about this place all the time and I'm counting the days. I don't know how many, but until I go back and see my friends.
That's so great. It's Kira Alkema. She is going to be doing the travel log tonight at 5:15 at the Gold Town, sponsored by the Juneau World Affairs Council. It starts in just a little bit. Head over there after work. It sounds like there's some great pictures and some good stories and a wonderful adventure and some interesting things about what's going on in the world. So that's going to be tonight at 5:15 at the Gold Town. I want to thank Kira for coming in. Gunath Chish. And Linda, thank you for telling us about the Juneau World Affairs Council. And the next travel logs and all of those things are available on the website at jwac.org. Gwyneth Cheese for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, Grateful Dogs of Juneau's 14th annual pet food drive is happening now. We'll find out more and how you can participate next on Juneau Afternoon from KTOO. But first, a savory moment.
Step in to the savory moment. In Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada, there is a clock, a large digital clock posted on a downtown street. It's a boar tide clock, and it announces when the next tidal boar, one long unbroken wave of water, is expected to travel up the Petticodiac River from the Bay of Fundy, 117 miles away. Bleachers are set up on the riverbank where expectant onlookers, mostly tourists, await this tidal phenomenon that in Moncton is the color of a Hershey's chocolate bar and surges upriver at 8 miles an hour. Sometimes onlookers wait for a while, checking their watches in puzzlement when the boar is late. But Moncton's boar tide clock, much like a tide table, merely offers predictions, not promises. That's because the orbits of moon and sun that influence the tides wobble a little. Wind speed and direction, barometric pressure, rain, and storm surge also have a hand in the timing of a tide. Recipes offer mere predictions, too. Your cookbook says that eggplant relish for tonight's appetizer tray will be creamy and herbaceous with a hint of vegetable sweetness. But are there bitter seeds in that eggplant? Did you roast your peppers to a syrupy softness or just do a quick saute? Is that rosemary plump with aromatic oils or shriveled? Your relish will be influenced by all these factors and more. A cook's version of weather and celestial wobble. A tide waits for no one, and a boar tide might make you wait on cold metal bleachers. But a good relish is largely under your control. Find the full recipe for extravagant eggplant relish at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
This is Juneau Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Grateful Dogs of Juneau was formed in 2005. They've cooperated with CBJ Parks and Rec, the U.S. Forest Service, the Fish and Game, and other on dog-related issues here in Juneau. And now, it's their 14th annual pet food drive, and it's one of their other fantastic feats. Here to tell us all about it and how we can get involved is Pam Nelson. Welcome, Pam.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio today to talk about this very important event, because at this time of year, there's always, you know, fundraisers or food gatherings for families, but sometimes we forget about the little critters.
Yep. And they're family too.
Yeah, they're absolutely family. And so tell us a little bit about Grateful Dogs of Juneau first, how it got started and why.
So Grateful Dogs started from a small volunteer group in about 2005. Some local people that were concerned that dog owners didn't have a voice in the community for some of the things that were going on with dog parks and thing people weren't happy about. Trails and people not picking up. And there were a lot of meetings going on. And so it was formed to have a volunteer nonprofit group that could represent the responsible dog owners in Juneau so that they could have a voice
right.
at these meetings and things like that. And to helpfully help encourage for people to be more responsible dog owners, taking care of their dogs, making sure that they're well cared for, that they pick up after their dogs and following all the municipality rules and things like that. So
I see. So yeah. People would go, like representatives from Grateful Dogs would go to like the assembly mm-hmm. or they'd go exactly. to all the different city meetings or whatever it would be mm-hmm. In terms of when things were happening. And that's probably been successful because the organization is still around.
We're
right?
still going. Yep. And, sometimes we're more active in some of those things going on and sometimes we don't have to be. And that's a good thing. But we usually like to give feedback on what we think of how if certain trails or things are closed or how that might affect pet owners or how we can work together with other people who use trails and things like that to keep them clean. And we'll do pet poop pickups like on Sandy Beach before 4th of July or keep track. We used to do it for the before the Easter egg hunts that they used to have out mm-hmm. And to make sure that there's not a lot of poop around and just to try and keep that focused in the community of people to be responsible.
Is that this is a sidetrack for me, but I'm just curious, is picking up, is that one of the most contentious issues that we face? Like, I think people who aren't dog people maybe mm-hmm. seem to be mad about, and then there's people who are dog people who are maybe more conscientious than others. But that seems to be like one of the underlying issues.
It's a hot button. It's usually a pretty hot button for people, yeah. And the people who find the poop bags on the trails, and it's like, why can't you pick up your poop bag? And then the off leash. Thing is another thing, yeah. and the competent right. voice control, that's always a big, thing for people. And you've seen more now, too, where people are being responsible. They know if they have reactive dogs, there's collars and things that help people to say, this is a red collared dog, that don't let your dog run up to my dog.
So we're getting sort of color coded with the collars now?
Yeah, so there are some things that it's not a requirement, but there you can buy them sometimes. So it's on the dog, like a harness that will help people realize that, don't, because a lot of times you'll have someone who's on leash walking a dog and someone who doesn't has a dog that's not on a leash runs up to that dog.
Right, right.
And people go, oh, my dog's friendly. And you're like, yeah, but mine is a little, doesn't like to be approached that way.
Or the little 5-year-old kid who loves animals and doesn't realize that dog is not really into kids.
Or maybe has never been around kids.
Right,
it's just trying to teach things in that way, too, of, teaching parents and if they're not around dogs or, just for everyone to be cognizant that dogs and animals have reactions and feelings too, and sometimes they may be surprised in a situation. And how, as a dog owner, you can prepare for that, and then how, as the general public, if you're not a dog owner, how you should be responsible and respectful to everyone's space.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that. I hadn't heard about that before. That's a great way to do it, though, because visual is a great way, because mm-hmm. the distance on the trails and things like that.
Yep.
So that's good. Okay, so the food drive, which is in its 14th year, which also means it's been quite successful, which is awesome. And it's actually started yesterday.
Yes.
And so tell us a little bit about it, what we're looking for, and what do we do?
So we have two drop-off locations, and we're collecting dog and cat food. We may be Grateful Dogs of Juneau, but we are here for our kitty friends, too.
Our feline friends.
And we do need – actually, we have a great need for dry cat food.
Okay.
So we supply foods to Southeast Alaska Food Bank here in Juneau, as well as Resurrection Lutheran Food Pantry. So those are the two local food pantries that the general public can go to. Southeast Alaska Food Bank, as I think it's on Thursdays from 3 to 5:30, they're open to the general public. And Resurrection Lutheran Church, their food pantry is 12 to 4:30. So if people need to pick up stuff, they can go there.
Okay.
But if you want to drop, if you're donating and you want to drop off, Petco. So anytime during their business hours and you can drop off there, you can buy it there and add it to their basket. Or you can bring it from, if you buy it at Costco and bring it, it doesn't matter where it comes from. Or JAR, Juneau Animal Rescue, is also another drop-off location for it. And you can buy the big bags, small bags, whatever works for you, whatever you can afford. We'll break the bigger bags down into smaller portions to be handed out to the locations. And so JAR is through Saturday that you can drop off, and Petco is all the way through Sunday.
And it's whatever their business hours are. There's probably a bin inside the door.
Yep.
As it's raining and stuff, you don't want the stuff to get all soggy.
Right.
Right. So you want to go during business hours. It's great that Petco is there because it's convenient. You can just buy a little bag of something. Now, are you looking for, I know you mentioned for cat food, you're looking for dry food. Mm-hmm. And is there specific things that you need for dogs, or are we looking for dry food mostly, because does that keep better?
I think it's more dry food specifically. Okay. I think for both cats, and specifically for cats as a dry food, because we always have a need for, because cats seem to be a little more picky on their dry food or on their wet food.
Mine is.
So whenever the food pantries, the places that we're giving the food to, are always usually looking for dry cat food. So that seems to be a big thing. And usually
dogs don't really care.
Dogs are kind of, they're usually pretty good at eating whatever's in front of them. One of the exciting things in the last couple of years is we've also been able to provide food to some of our outlying communities.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
Sitka, Haines, Angoon, Cake, Gustavus, Tenakee Springs, Hoonah. So we've been able to make some contacts out there, which has been great. Our hardest part is getting the food to them.
Mm.
So if anyone is ever coming into town from those places on the ferry and they have a car and they can bring stuff back out with them, just contact us and we'll connect you with our contact out in that community. Or if you're flying and you have space on a plane, because it's not cost effective for us to mail stuff
to
places.
That sounds like we need to call Alaska Seaplanes.
Yeah. if they have any space or they can shove a little bag, that would be great, because it's been really nice to be able to help those communities. And we started this as just a holiday pet food drive back in 2010, and where we did it every year. And then in the last couple of years, we've also kind of been just being able to collect food all year round.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Petco actually gives us a lot of food, of things that if it was damaged and things like that. So we haven't, if you have anyone throughout the year wants to help or, add some food, they can contact us and we'll be happy to take it. And that way we can still get it out to the local food banks here in Juneau and then out to the outlying communities, which is really nice.
That is great. That is really great. And I know that there are, there's around this time of year, there's also interestingly like toy drives and stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you accept like little, are you into that yet? Are you taking on like little cat toys or dog biscuits or?
We do sometimes get toys and things like that from Petco and things like that if they arrive damaged, or we will sometimes get donations of like harnesses and different things like that, and we'll take them and we'll try and find uses for them either in some of the outlying areas. They'll take them or sometimes we'll actually turn it on SHR if they need them, or any of the rescue groups in town, and sometimes are out that we can potentially get those to people or that might need them.
Right, but it's really about feeding
about feeding it, because sometimes you don't want to have someone have to make a choice between filling their oil tank or putting gas in their car or buying pet food.
Right.
And we definitely want to keep families and their pets together. We don't thankfully see it as much up here in Juneau, but down south there's a huge amount of pets being returned to shelters and things like that, because people can't afford to take care of their pets or to feed them, or they're feeding they're feeding them whatever they can.
Yeah.
In any case, if they know someone that's having a hard time feeding their pets, please reach out to us. And we'll work on getting them food too for their pets. If it's an elder or someone who can't get out or doesn't know that we're here for that, I'd be more than happy to go take it to somebody.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they need it and that can help them.
And you can hit the website, gratefuldogsofjuno.org. Yep. You can also call 907-586-3849. We're talking about the 14th annual pet food drive. It's going now through Sunday. There's two drop-off locations. You can drop off at Jar through Saturday and Petco through Sunday at the operating business hours. And if you're in need of food, can you mention the two places where you're that here locally that folks could reach out to if they're looking for food?
Yes. If you need pet food, Southeast Alaska Food Bank out on Crazy Horse Drive is they're open to the public on Thursdays from 3 to 5:30. And then downtown Resurrection Lutheran Church also has a food pantry on Tuesdays from 12 to 4:30. And if you're somebody that's homebound and you need help with getting food for a pet, you know, contact the Grateful Dogs either on Facebook or at that phone number and we'll connect with you and get food to you.
Yeah, that's 586-3849. Sounds like you have a Facebook group as well, yes, where I'm sure people are communicating about these things. And look for other great events from the Grateful Dogs throughout the year. And thank you for the poop pickup.
You're very welcome.
It's Pam Nelson from the Grateful Dogs of Juno about the 14th annual pet food drive happening now. Thank you for coming in, Pam. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Gwyneth Cheesh. Up next, we'll chat with the Juno Public Libraries about all the December events. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from KTOO.
Let's have a store party. This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the Apollo 8 mission. We've heard of the Apollo 11 mission in 1969 that landed the first people on the moon. Well, the Apollo 8 mission of 1968 was very important for all the firsts that it had. There were three crew members, Borman, Lovell, and Anders. Lovell's still alive, he's in his 90s. The first that the Apollo 8 had was, it was the first use of the Saturn V rocket developed by Wernher von Braun. It was the first rocket to leave Earth's orbit. It was the first to enter the orbit of another celestial object, the moon. It was the first rocket to deliver humans to gaze on the far side of the moon. And the Apollo 8 mission had six live broadcasts, and it's estimated that a quarter of the Earth's population listened to them. That was at the time, 1968, 1 billion people. And the broadcast ran the gamut from observation of what the astronauts were seeing, and also a famous reading of the first 10 lines of the book of Genesis from the Christian Bible. And also another effect was what is now called the overview effect, which is the shift of perspective and priority that is afforded by astronauts when they view the Earth as seen from space. This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. Our public shows are scheduled on our website at mariedrakeplanetarium.org. Thank you.
Listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Time once again for our monthly check-in with the Juno Public Libraries. This time it's the December/holiday edition. Joining me now is Margaret Lukey. Hi, Margaret.
Hello.
It's nice to see you. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Getting in that, you know, Christmassy, holiday-y spirit, all the different things going on, the public market and the gallery walk, and town is buzzing with stuff.
And yeah, and that stuffed market sounds like
stuffed
a lot of
market
fun.
Next weekend.
Yep.
Yeah,
good
so
times.
That'll be at the Jack, which is going to be a lot of fun. But I know that the library also has a lot of fun at this time of year. There's a lot going on this month. But let's talk about some of the events, and then we also have to talk about the Douglas closure
yes,
a little bit and where
yes.
you're going to be moving things to and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So let's start with the chess tournament. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So Wednesday the 13th at 4 p.m. to 7:45 p.m., we're going to be at the Valley Library and the Juno Chess Club. They're a local organization. They're hosting a chess tournament. So you do have to show up. You have to sign up before the end of the second round. If you you can come a little bit late and you'll still get to enter, but you do have to make it. There's no entry after the second round. And we're welcoming chess players of all skill levels. So come on down. There's a chance to win a prize. There will be prizes for first, second, and third place. It's gift cards for local food vendors.
Oh, that's nice. And is yeah. there different, is it just anybody can participate? Does it matter age?
No age,
so
no
like,
skill.
I could be going against some 10-year-old savant who's going to.
Yes, it's yeah. very possible. yes. Yeah, so the first round, they're going to pair people randomly. And then after that, you'll receive a score based on whether you win, lose, or draw.
Okay.
And they'll, for every round after the first one, they're going to pair people based on scores.
I see. That's yeah. so cool. Because I know you do, usually you do some, there are some chess nights throughout the year, but this
yeah.
is a tournament.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
this isn't just come and play.
Come with your game face on.
This is
time.
Like ready to win a prize. Mm-hmm. And it mm-hmm. sounds like there's some cool food vendors and three prizes. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
All right. And that's next week, Wednesday,
yes.
the 13th. Okay, mm-hmm. great. Okay. What else is happening?
Yeah. So unfortunately, the Douglas Library has had to be closed for a couple of weeks. We're working on some repairs to the drywall and repairs are underway and we're hoping to be open relatively soon, but we don't have an open date yet, unfortunately.
Sad.
So in the meantime, people who usually get their holds from the Douglas Library can have those picked up at either the downtown or the Valley locations, and you can call 907-586-5249 to have those hold with to ask for help changing your holds pickup locations.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yep. And then we are still checking the book drop regularly. So if you live in the Douglas area, you don't want to have to drive all the way downtown to turn in your books, you can still drop them off at the Douglas Library. We check it just about every day. So don't worry about that. That's good news.
Okay,
there.
That is good news. Yeah.
And then we usually have story times at the Douglas Library on Tuesdays at 3:30 p.m. While we're closed, those are going to be over at the downtown library. Same time, also on Tuesdays, but we'll be at the downtown library. And we've just committed to being at the downtown library through the end of December.
Okay. So you think it's going to take a few weeks and maybe be open by the first of the
yeah,
year again?
You know, so we might be reopen before the end of December. We're hoping to reopen before the end of December. But a lot of the damage that we are repairing is in the meeting room space where we host story times. So,
right. So you got to make sure that's safe yeah. and ready to go. And you can just basically monitor at juno.org/library, right?
Exactly.
You'll probably mention on there when it's back open again.
Yep. And our Facebook and Instagram, we're posting updates as we have them. So you can keep an eye out on those too.
Absolutely. Okay,
yeah.
great. That's good to know about the Douglas Library. It's closed down for a few weeks.
Yeah.
And you can get your book drop still on over there, or you can have your holds changed at 586-5249 is the number to call.
Yep.
Okay, great.
And we are hoping to reopen in time for our planned scavenger hunt on December 30th. That's Saturday, December 30th from 1 to 4 at the Douglas Library. We had a scavenger hunt back in October, also at the Douglas Library. It was a lot of fun. There were clues for all ages, like littles all the way up to adults, to test your library knowledge and learn new things about the library.
I love it.
Using these fun interactive clues. We'll have new clues, brand new set of clues for people to come on out and.
But are they blues clues?
I could suggest some blues clues.
It's all good. So that's the scavenger hunt, and it's happening December 30th, hopefully at the Douglas Library.
Yes.
Yeah, keep an eye on the website for that.
Yeah.
And what else is happening?
Yeah, we've got a game day on. New Year's Eve, where, you know, nothing shuts us down for the game days. It doesn't matter if it's
gotta get our game on.
Yeah. Come on out with the whole family. It's 1 to 4 p.m. on Sunday, December 31st at the Valley Library. We're partnering again. This is our monthly game day with Platypus Gaming. They're going to bring out their huge library of games. You can give them a try. They're rated for ages 5 and up, so really littles might have a harder time with the game, but your kiddos 5 and up will find things to enjoy. And then there's lots of really complicated games that are very fun for adults.
And the folks from Platypus, they're really good about helping people get into a game or understand how to play, because some of those rules can get a little complicated.
They have like an encyclopedic knowledge of all of these games. They're really great about helping people navigate some of the rules. And then there's usually a couple of floating people in case you so if you're solo or if you're only two people and you want to play a three-player game, you can usually find somebody to pair up with and give a game a go.
That sounds great. And of course, you can find all the details about this at juno.org/library. The Juno Public Libraries offers a great service to the community. And before we have to go, Margaret, I wanted to find out what's on your holiday reading list. What should we be looking at? Anything that you might recommend? Putting you on the spot.
Yeah, I think I've talked about it before, but my big holiday reading list this year, or my big holiday recommend, is a book called 4,000 Weeks. I'm forgetting the subtitle, but it's called 4,000 Weeks, and the author's name is Oliver Berkman, and it's like a self-help book about time management, but in the big picture of our limited time here on Earth. We only have an average of 4,000 weeks in our life. How do we want to spend it? Not how do we maximize our time every hour and like clear the decks every day and make sure that we always get things done. It's about thinking about the bigger picture. And it's a really, I love it as a way to frame New Year's resolutions.
Oh, like, yeah.
What are we really thinking about for the next year?
Yeah.
What do we really want to do and prioritize over
4,000 weeks?
Mm-hmm. Oliver Berkman. And for those of us who don't have time to sit down and read the book, it is available as an audiobook on Alaska Digital Library with your library card. And it's excellent. It's read by the author. He's very...
That's a good way to do it.
Soothing. He's very soothing.
Especially with, as busy as we all get around this time of year.
Totally.
And December kind of disappears, but it's a good time to sit down and actually think about what it is you want to be doing this month. And I guess for your life with the 4,000 weeks that you have.
Yeah.
Margaret, thanks for coming in again and catching us all up on the Juno Public Libraries. Really appreciate it. Gunth Cheesh.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a terrific Tuesday. On tomorrow's show, you've got talent, yes you do, and Juno's Got Talent wants you. We'll find out about the auditions happening next week and what you can do to prepare. Plus, a preview of this Friday's UAS Creative Showcase. We'll talk with Ernestine Hayes, Emily Wall, and Lily Hope. Juno Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Find the show online at KTOO.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks, and have a glorious Juno evening.